3 years ago, if you would have told me that we'd be receiving an executive order that basically reads like a piece of foundational Bitcoin literature, I would have thought that you were crazy.
Get ready to jumpstart your week with the FCAT Crypto Brief, brought to you by Fidelity Center for Applied Technology. Every week, we roll up our sleeves and delve into the hottest topics, from blockchain breakthroughs to DeFi revolutions and market happenings. We promise to go deeper than the headlines and deliver insights you can't get just anywhere. Be sure to hit the subscribe button for your weekly dose of crypto commentary. Quick disclaimer, we're here for education, not investment advice. Views expressed are that of the hosts, not Fidelity or its affiliates. Crypto's a wild space, highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is strictly for those with a high risk tolerance. Buckle up, enjoy the ride, and let's dive into what's been happening recently.
Hey guys, how's it going? Happy Friday.
Hey Matt, happy Friday. Morning.
I think it's another busy news week. I think we'll have plenty to cover.
Definitely.
But aside from the news, how are you both doing?
Doing well. Things are good. Always stuff happening in across the crypto space. So sort of never a dull day or never a dull week. Certainly with, you know, the administration turnover, there's, you know, a lot happening across the space. A lot of rumors swirling around. Hard to know what's real and what's not. Hopefully we can provide a little bit of clarity amidst all of this.
Yeah, that's what we're here to do. I think that leads into our first story very nicely. You know, over the course of the last week, we've had a lot of news, a lot of rumors swirling around. Crypto reserves, digital asset stockpiles, but we got a bit more definitive news last night. David, do you want to kind of give an overview?
Sure. So last night we got an executive order signed that is titled Establishment of the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve and United States Digital Assets Stockpile. And to really explain what's going on here, I want to give the full context so we can back up to July of last year. Donald Trump did a keynote speech at Bitcoin Nashville, where he stated his intentions to create a strategic national Bitcoin stockpile. So this set off a bunch of speculation in the crypto community, mostly around how they will go about this, with the big questions being, will the government be buying additional Bitcoin? Will they just take the Bitcoin they already hold and put it in a stockpile? And this went on for a while until after Trump's inauguration, we got our first Trump executive order. This was in late January. And this first executive order dealing with digital assets established the president's working group on digital asset markets. And they were tasked with evaluating the potential to create and maintain a national digital asset stockpile. So this was sort of the first glimpse we got that things were happening behind the scenes to at least look into this. Fast forward to last week, I believe, we get a tweet from Trump, and I'm just going to read the tweet. It said, "A U.S. crypto reserve will elevate this critical industry after years of corrupt attacks by the Biden administration, which is why my executive order on digital assets directed the presidential working group to move forward on a crypto strategic reserve that includes XRP, SOL, and ADA. I will make sure the U.S. is the crypto capital of the world. We are making America great again." And then a few minutes later, he's tweeted again, which said, "And obviously, BTC and ETH, as other valuable cryptocurrencies, will be the heart of the reserve. I also love Bitcoin and Ethereum." So this created a large reaction. There was a large appreciation in the prices of the assets named in the tweets, and set off a ton of speculation, with many in the crypto space believing that this meant that the government would be purchasing these altcoins, presumably with taxpayer money. And so the large run-up in prices we saw was many people possibly trying to like front-run that buying that they assumed Trump meant by his tweet. So after this tweet came out, a bunch of industry leaders tweeted publicly, this included Brian Armstrong, Jesse Powell, and the Winklevide twins, that, well, they didn't think it really made much sense for the government to be accumulating altcoins. They saw maybe it making sense with Bitcoin, but generally expressed displeasure in, you know, the perception that the government buying alts might happen. So we fast forward to last night. Trump signs an executive order called the Establishment of the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve and the United States Digital Asset Stockpile. And this had two big things. So obviously it separated out Bitcoin into its own strategic reserve, and it created a separate digital asset stockpile. So first, I'm going to talk about the digital asset stockpile. The executive order directs the Secretary of the Treasury to establish an office to administer this. It will be capitalized by digital assets / altcoins already held by the government. It instructs all the government departments to send their altcoins to the Treasury within 30 days. And it instructs the Secretary of the Treasury to determine strategies for responsible stewardship of the digital asset stockpile. This is an important factor that we'll talk about in a second. And it also states that the U.S. government will not acquire additional stockpile assets other than when they're like criminally forfeited from someone. So as far as altcoins are concerned, the executive order states that there will be no buying of these assets, you know, with taxpayer money. So now we're going to talk about the Bitcoin reserve. The Bitcoin reserve is similar, but there are a few important differences. It directs the Treasury Secretary to establish an office to administer it. It will be capitalized by the Bitcoin already held by the government. It directs all of the departments to send their Bitcoin to the Treasury in the next 30 days. And importantly, it states that the Strategic Bitcoin Reserve will not be sold, and it will be maintained as a reserve asset of the United States. And it also states, interestingly, that the Secretary of the Treasury and the Secretary of the Commerce will develop strategies for acquiring additional government BTC, provided that the strategies are budget neutral. So this news that came out last night was met by a market sell-off, which is interesting. And it comes on the heels of a White House crypto summit that is happening today, where a bunch of industry leaders and CEOs are meeting with the Trump administration at the White House. So I know that was a lot. I'm curious, Jack, what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, based on the sort of market sell-off, I guess in aggregate, market participants were expecting more. But my personal take on the situation is, like, overall, it's relatively positive, especially if you're a Bitcoiner, because I do think that what you see here is kind of a separation between Bitcoin and everything else. And that's something, like, I feel like we talk about quite a bit, is like Bitcoin is by far the largest proof of work asset, and therefore, like, its governance process is functionally different. It's not like a venture-backed project. And therefore, even in the executive order, I think it calls Bitcoin, in quotes, like a digital gold, right? I think that's literally written in it, is like, it's a 21 million supply cap, often viewed as digital gold. That's like pretty wild that that's written in an executive order now in 2025. Like, if you said that was going to happen 5 or 6 years ago, I don't think anybody would have believed you. And so, like, to have come all this way to where, you know, people are now saying, oh, we need a Fort Knox of digital gold on top of the gold that we hold, like, I don't know. It feels like a pretty momentous occasion, regardless of, like, sort of what the market reaction is.
Yeah, definitely. One thing that I can appreciate is that it leaves the future acquisition of assets to Congress. And, you know, this thing itself is an executive order. And if something like this were to be done via an act of Congress, it may be a little bit more sticky. So, Matt, I don't know, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think from a high level perspective, I agree with Jack, right? Like, I think this is very positive news. Again, 3 years ago, if you would have told me that we'd be receiving an executive order that basically reads like a piece of foundational Bitcoin literature, calling out the game theory of Bitcoin, the security of Bitcoin, the lack of hacks on Bitcoin, I would have thought that you were crazy. So I think it speaks to how far we've come. I also think that the cessation of government selling is very positive for the asset class. There have been rumors, and they're all very unconfirmed, that government selling was occurring at times of market weakness or lack of market liquidity, and it was helping to drive prices down. So I think removing that sell pressure from the market is overall positive. But yeah, I do agree with you, David, right? If this were to come through an act of Congress, it would be very sticky. This is an executive order. If in 3 years, the next administration rolls in, decides that they don't like Bitcoin, they could just undo this and continue selling the what is now the strategic reserve. So I think it'll be interesting to see, one, what happens with Congress. But then two, another nugget that I find interesting is that the EO establishes that both the Secretary of Treasury and the Secretary of Commerce are to evaluate ways to add more Bitcoin to the stockpile that's budget neutral. I don't necessarily know if there's a plan for ways to achieve this, but I do think it's interesting that Secretary of Commerce is included in this EO, because Howard Lutnick is the Secretary of Commerce, and he's been very pro-Bitcoin very publicly. So I think that it does maybe bode very well for a continued expansion of the reserve. I think we'll just have to wait and see on that front.
Yeah, the only like budget neutral thing I can think of that wouldn't be super controversial, and this is just speculative, is like we have large gold reserves, and to say, you know, the argument I guess would be, this is digital gold. We think this is where the puck is heading, is people continuing to see more and more value in this digital version of what we already hold. And so let's convert some of this physical gold into digital gold would be like the argument I think some are making. It does feel like there would probably be some pushback over that. And also, like, important, David, you noted this, it wasn't like a bill passed through Congress. This was an executive order. And I think that was for a reason. There's not enough like political capital, and there's not enough actual buy-in here to like go out and say, let's take taxpayer dollars directly and start buying Bitcoin or digital assets. Instead, it's like, hey, we already have these tokens. We're just not going to sell them. And to the degree that we continue to seize, you know, tokens that are involved in illicit activities, we'll just continue to not sell them. And therefore it's like less of an issue that those in Congress probably won't, you know, try to push back on as hard, because while money is fungible, it's like, this is money that only exists because it was, you know, seized from these illicit activities.
Right. One thing I will mention is that the executive order does leave the door open to sell non-Bitcoin digital assets. And maybe that could be a budget neutral way of accumulating more Bitcoin. Just a thought. I've also heard the idea of Bitcoin backed bonds thrown around, but I'm not exactly sure how that might work or what it would look like. One thing I am looking at is, do other countries follow suit here? Does this actually like set off a bunch of copycats? And the last thing I want to mention is that you'll see a lot of numbers out there that the US government holds around 200,000 Bitcoins, which is true. Now, roughly half of those came from the Bitfinex hackers, Ilya and Razzlecon. But the point is that those coins were not seized like in a criminal forfeiture. They came from the Bitfinex hackers and will presumably go back to Bitfinex. So realistically, we have around 100,000 coins that will probably go into the strategic Bitcoin reserve.
So that's what, $10 billion, give or take, at current prices?
Right, well, roughly. So that puts us second. I think China is known to hold around 200,000 coins. So it would put us in second place.
I think that's an interesting call out and important to note, David, right, that eventually roughly half of those 200,000 coins will go back to Bitfinex, presumably. And when that happens, it's not the government selling. It's just the natural order of the law and how this is all supposed to be structured. But speaking on reserves, I think that kind of leads us into a next story that we want to touch on quickly, which is El Salvador's deal with the IMF. So for those of you who aren't familiar, in 2021, the president of El Salvador, Nayib Bukele, started accumulating Bitcoin and actually announced Bitcoin as legal tender in El Salvador. So all businesses were required to accept Bitcoin if users wanted to pay in Bitcoin. The government rolled out a wallet called the Chivo wallet that it then gave to all of its citizens. So even those who weren't familiar with Bitcoin were able to hold a Bitcoin wallet and send and receive Bitcoin. However, as part of an IMF deal, so the International Monetary Fund, just for context, the IMF has been very critical of El Salvador's Bitcoin practices. El Salvador announced that it would stop requiring businesses to accept Bitcoin as legal tender. And another part of the IMF deal was that El Salvador is supposed to stop buying Bitcoin on the public balance sheet. However, Bukele has pushed back on this part of the deal and is saying that El Salvador will continue to accumulate Bitcoin. So initially, after the announcement that El Salvador would stop requiring businesses to accept Bitcoin's legal tender, their bonds rose to roughly 2.5 cents on the dollar. So bondholders view this as very positive and signs that the IMF deal would proceed. However, with Bukele pushing back, would now puts the deal in a bit more of limbo, and we're not quite sure what will happen. I don't know if Jack or David, you have opinions on what the path forward might be here for El Salvador, but it's definitely an interesting story.
Yeah, not even specific to El Salvador, more like the viewpoint of the IMF here, I think also similar to like the average viewpoint of like people in Congress, where it's like Bitcoin and crypto is still seen as this highly speculative, volatile asset class, and arguably rightfully so. And until then, like, sure, it's this aspirational digital gold, but on a grand scale, it's still seen as like a small experimental asset. And while El Salvador, you know, continues to want to embrace it, like you can see from the actions of the IMF here, they still see it as potentially like the volatility of Bitcoin being threatening to the economy of El Salvador, and therefore, you know, obviously only willing to lend these funds if, you know, they agree to certain terms around the usage of Bitcoin or the reliance of Bitcoin for the economy of El Salvador.
Yeah, I think that, you know, El Salvador is an energy-rich country, and if they want to take some of that energy and convert it into Bitcoin and hold it in their, you know, national reserves, that makes sense. But for Bitcoin to be used for payments, which is sort of what I think the Chivo wallet was trying to accomplish, there's just not a ton of appetite even from regular people to use Bitcoin for payments. It's just not the greatest experience, and it's volatile, and Bitcoin sort of natively just incentivizes you to hold it. So a lot of people just aren't really trying to part with it. So it seems like the IMF's angle might be they are trying to sort of protect regular El Salvadorians from the volatility of Bitcoin, and maybe that's why they're going after the wallet specifically.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting point, because my initial take on this story actually was that I think it makes sense for the IMF to be concerned surrounding El Salvador's holding of Bitcoin, right? If Bitcoin were to see a serious drawdown right at the same time that El Salvador were to start to fall into a balance of payments crisis, like this reserve and this balance sheet that they thought that they had might not still be there, it might worsen the crisis and cause further contagion. So from the IMF's perspective, I think that that portion makes sense. But I was a little bit curious around their requirement that El Salvador not require businesses to accept Bitcoin. That seemed a little bit outside of their purview. But I do think that you're right, David. I do think it comes down to trying to protect everyday El Salvadorians. And I think that they have good data to back up kind of pushing back on that requirement, given that in 2023, it's estimated that 88% of El Salvadorians never used Bitcoin. So even though businesses were required to accept it, on a day-to-day usage basis, it really wasn't seeing a lot of uptick or usage on the ground. And that's really outside of like Bitcoin Beach. For those who are unfamiliar, it's a an area in El Salvador is very pro Bitcoin. You get a lot of Bitcoiners going down there from a tourism perspective. So I think that can be positive from a tourism revenue perspective. But as far as everyday usage throughout the rest of the country, I don't think there's been a lot of uptake or usage.
Yeah, we've seen far more appetite within LATAM, speaking more broadly, to use stablecoins like Tether and USDC rather than to pay with Bitcoin on the Lightning Network. There's appetite to use dollars because it's a global reserve currency that people view as a stable currency versus, of course, Bitcoin is inherently volatile. It's still early in its adoption, as this aspiring store of value asset. I mean, it kind of speaks to everything we've been talking about here, but there's appetite to use stablecoins versus Lightning and Bitcoin for payments. Maybe that changes in the future, but right now the trends continue to be more and more usage of crypto wallets for access to dollars, which is a little bit ironic in that, of course, Bitcoin was created as a non-state money and blockchain is sort of proliferating in terms of actual day-to-day usage in some of these emerging countries to actually get better access to the existing system and dollars.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point and very interesting, right? Like, stables just seem to continue to be the largest use case in emerging markets. Just anecdotally, if you talk to any Bitcoiners who go down to like Argentina and they ask local Argentinians, do you want Bitcoin or do you want stables? The answer 9 times, 10 times out of 10 is they want access to stable coins.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of companies within LATAM, Argentina, Brazil, Mexico, Colombia, and they're doing like real meaningful revenues and growing year over year at a pretty rapid clip, doing predominantly stable coins, providing access to the entire meaningful crypto ecosystem. So you can on-ramp to a lot of these platforms from your local currency and then own stable coins, but also own Bitcoin or Ethereum if you want to. And the revenues, if you look at like sort of the revenue concentration, is predominantly just getting access to stable coins.
I've always thought that method of exchange will be maybe one of the last use cases that Bitcoin could achieve. There are probably a bunch of use cases it will have to get before then. And one of it is like at a market cap of 1 to 2 trillion, it's still going to be really volatile for anything to be used for pricing or like a method of exchange. But at a market cap at 10 trillion or beyond, maybe you get more stability in the asset that will make it a little bit more appropriate for use cases like that. That's sort of how I think about it.
Yeah. And like desirable attributes of a monetary asset, I think of as like, there's primarily three attributes that they fill into, which is store of value, unit of account, and medium of exchange. And like unit of account by and large is still local fiat currency denomination. And then also for a lot of these countries, people think about things in the context of the US dollar because it tends to be stable or preserve value far better than these local emerging market currencies. And so like until people look at their savings in Bitcoin terms, why would I want to use Bitcoin for payments when it's volatile versus like there's an alternative that allows me to spend dollars? I don't see it taking over for a means of payment. Maybe stablecoins on top of like Lightning. I know Tether's experimenting with some of that, or like Bitcoin-backed stablecoins potentially as a theme. I've heard a little bit of talk about that, but actually using Bitcoin as a means of payment, I feel like I struggle to see that widespread adoption until people view it as a unit of account first and foremost, which I'd argue they don't today by and large outside of small handful of Bitcoiners. But that doesn't mean that it can't be a store of value asset and function as a digital gold and not be used for payments at least anytime soon and still have value. I mean, there's obviously a discussion around like long-term sustainability of the security mechanism, right? When it's reliant on transaction fees, and if everybody just holds the asset once they buy it and doesn't actually transact on it, then that could potentially become problematic down the line. But I think we have a long way to go before that concern exists, and people are starting to tinker and try to build on top of Bitcoin regardless as well. So
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I don't think we want to open up that can of worms today. Yeah. We can save that discussion for a future conversation.
Yeah, no security budget FUD.
Yeah, when we're all much older. We have a few minutes left here. We have a couple other stories, mainly focused on DeFi governance. Jack, do you want to tee up the Aave proposal? Because I think this one is really interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I think the story came out this week, there was a governance post this week on Aave forums, and it's called Aavenomics Implementation Part 1. I think last August, there was a temp check post on Aavenomics, which sometimes these governance groups will put out basically a feeler post of hey, here's kind of what we're thinking, and then just sort of look for community response in terms of what the reaction would be to something like this rather than actually proposing something. Now something is actually starting to be proposed, and then it'll be iterated on, and there'll continue to be feedback until eventually there'll be potentially an actual governance vote and snapshot, and then potential implementation of something like this. The main sort of takeaway, or the thing I found most interesting, was basically just looking at Aave as an on-chain protocol or on-chain business. And they have $115 million in assets in the DAO treasury. They have $18.5 billion in total value locked in assets in the pools. Aave is a borrow lend platform, so people can lend dollars or stablecoin dollars to earn interest, or lend ETH, or lend other tokens that they have as collateral. And other people can borrow against collateral on chain. It's a margin lending platform effectively. And then Aave earns a net interest margin on the difference between what borrowers are paying and then what they're paying out as fees or revenue, the portion of revenue that goes to those that are lending their assets. And they're making close to $100 million annualized at the moment in terms of revenue. And so basically there's just real revenue generation that's happening on Aave, and they're not the only one, but they're the largest borrow lend platform in crypto. So $100 million in fee revenue to the protocol going to the DAO, you start to have the potential for a shift in the regulatory landscape. Obviously, the Uniswap case seems like it was dropped recently, according to reports, and then a handful against more centralized entities within crypto. But it does seem like the potential for value accrual mechanisms to open up for these on-chain protocols is growing. And in this Aavenomics proposal, they talk about basically doing buy and burn, so basically token buybacks, which we've seen from others like Maker, and then also about potentially distributing some of this revenue out to stakers of some form. So paying out, whether it be USDC or Aave or ETH, out to stakers that hold Aave tokens. And it's just to me, an evolution or maturation of these protocols is the ones that are actually earning revenue have a growing treasury, and that treasury eventually can start to distribute that capital if they don't need it for growth purposes. And that just seems healthy and maturity out of some of these protocols. So there actually is, to me, real stuff being built on some of these chains. There aren't a ton of protocols with $100 million in revenue annualized, but there are a few, and those few, I think, will start to be rewarded for returning capital to token holders. And that a lot of that translates into what you see in traditional markets with traditional businesses that have a cash flow, and then they return capital to shareholders as they begin to mature. And I think we'll start to see more and more liquid funds that are trading these tokens based on the actual fundamentals of the underlying protocol, because they can now start to potentially redistribute some of that value to token holders.
Yeah, it's definitely really exciting to see. I really feel that so many protocol tokens were just governance tokens for the longest time because it was too risky to put in any type of fee switch or anything that, paid money back to token holders. And now it feels like there is a bunch of these DeFi protocols going in the direction of experimenting with different token models and deciding, okay, how much are we going to put into the treasury? How much will we burn? How much will we return to the token holders? And there's no proven model yet. There's still like a ton of experimentation to be done on protocol token models. And it's very exciting to see this experimentation really start to pick up. One thing that I think will be really important will be the distribution of protocol token holders. So if your token distribution sits in with a bunch of investors who are looking to return capital to their LPs, for example, quickly, they will have different incentives to pull levers to increase the token price sooner, rather than maybe token holders who want to take a more long-term approach to the protocol's governance and will forego higher token prices in the near term to build something more sustainable over the long term. So I think that will be the big factor here, and how these protocol token models play out will be what does the holder base look like and what are their incentives.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And also with something like an Aave, where I don't know off the top of my head, but I would imagine because it's been around for so long that like all of the assets are unlocked. So the circulating supply is, I'm loading it right now, let's say, yeah, the circulating supply is almost identical to the fully diluted valuation, meaning that like basically all the tokens or 90%+ of the tokens have already been distributed. And therefore there's not like these huge unlocks of super early investors that they're already up, you know, 10x on their investment, and therefore they just want to get their capital out. And you have all these weird perverse incentives from like early stage venture investors. You're seeing the fee switch talks most often with more of these mature protocols that have like long-term investors that own the liquid assets, not the early low basis venture investors. I think we'll continue to see that obviously as more protocols continue to mature and have most of their supply outstanding and don't have these huge unlocks.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I mean, I think from my perspective, like the real exciting piece of this proposal is that it kind of completes the DAO life cycle, like business life cycle on chain, and proves out the thesis that you can build a business on a decentralized business on chain, right? Like if the first part of that thesis is kind of like developing a product and then developing product market fit and then achieving revenue, and then that revenue you build up a treasury, and the natural like final step towards maturation is distributing that capital back to your shareholders. That kind of completes that life cycle and really puts a stamp of approval on any protocol that's able to reach that level of maturity. And to date, we haven't seen very many. So I think this is very exciting news.
Yeah. And also, I don't know, we're like sort of up on time here. Maybe I can leave it at this, is like, it speaks to the fact that like these things are super capital efficient as well. Because once you build them, it's just a set of smart contracts that, sure, you still need developers to continue to update and iterate, and it's a competitive landscape, so you have to constantly evolve and the game's always changing. But there's not a ton of overhead to Aave on chain. A lot of the net interest margin that they take, they don't have brick and mortar, you know, customer service and buildings to pay for. Like, there's a handful of developers that continue to maintain and upgrade these protocols. But other than that, there's a bunch of, you know, now cash flow that has to go somewhere, and it continues to accrue to the treasury. But once you can start to pay that out, you know, that's a high margin business effectively that exists on chain as a protocol. It's interesting to think about like how do investors price those things, and how will they price them in the future? I don't know. I think it's a game that will continue to evolve.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great place to leave it, right on that note right there. So thank you all for joining. This is a great conversation, and we'll look forward to keeping you updated.
Crypto as an asset class is highly volatile, can become illiquid at any time, and is for investors with a high risk tolerance. Crypto may also be more susceptible to market manipulation than securities. Crypto is not insured by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or the Securities Investor Protection Corporation. Investors in crypto do not benefit from the same regulatory protections applicable to registered securities. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. This podcast was produced by the Fidelity Center for Applied Technology, also known as FCAT. FCAT does not offer digital assets nor provide clearing or custody of such assets. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended to provide tax, legal, insurance, or investment advice, and should not be construed as an offer to sell, a solicitation of an offer to buy, or a recommendation for any security or other asset by any Fidelity entity or third party. Views expressed are as of the date indicated, based on the information available at the time, and may change based on market or other conditions. Unless otherwise noted, the opinions provided are those of the authors and not necessarily those of Fidelity Investments or its affiliates. Fidelity does not assume any duty to update any of the information. Fidelity and any other third parties mentioned in the podcast are independent entities and are not affiliated. Mentioning them does not suggest a recommendation or endorsement by Fidelity. This information is not intended for distribution to or use by any person or entity in any jurisdiction or country where such distribution or use would be contrary to local law or regulation. Persons accessing this information are required to inform themselves about and observe such restrictions. Third-party trademarks appearing herein are the property of their respective owners. All others are the property of FMR LLC. Copyright 2025 FMR LLC. All rights reserved. 1040156.